Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
Well. Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. I'm so glad that you are here. You know this is where the industrial professional comes to talk, and I'm super duper excited that you are here. This show is chock full of news, of course, and the interview is going to be rocking. So we've got a lot to cover. Once again, so glad that you're here. I'm passionate about you, and I'm passionate about that industrial professional that wants to be a success. So thank you for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. We are getting this show on the road. All right. We are going as I push buttons and shut things down and turn things on and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, thank you very much. I've been out for about a week. I was in Las Vegas. So we've got a great little update associated with that, as well as, you know, our interview. We're going to be diving deep into lean processing. But before we get going, you know, we always start with our safety tailgate.
Tailgate talk number one.
Well, that was pretty low, but nonetheless, okay, if you haven't noticed, I've been posting out there Industrial Dojo. It is on the Industrial Talk website, industrialtalk.com, but it's out there, and it's specific right now. We want to fill that funnel with opportunities, and these are just snippets, no time commitment, anywhere from maybe 9 to 12 minutes, and right now the series is included is about mind, right, and getting your mind straight from an industrial point of view and how you, as a leader, building that industrial leader, and that's what we're doing right now. So I've got about 5 out there, and then we're going to try to do it on a daily basis. So nonetheless, go on out there, go to it's industrialtalk.com. Go to Industrial Dojo, boom, you'll find everything there. And, of course, I'm loading it up, of course, on LinkedIn, Facebook. You got it. You know where to go. You know all the stuff.
Number two.
Okay. Once again, I got to turn that up a little bit. Great news. I was in Vegas last week, and we just kicked off a new podcast called Reliability Radio. That focuses on the reliability professional, that asset management individual, that person that is just into maintenance. And we highlight and we interview and we discuss the leaders in that. And that's with reliabilityweb.com. So once again, if you have any interest whatsoever in the reliability world, there's no other place to go, and that is reliabilityweb.com. They put on great shows. They've got events that are all over the world, quite honestly, and we're going to highlight some that are coming up here in New Orleans. I'll give you the dates on that one, as well as Maximo World, which is also an asset management platform that you need to be aware of. So we've got a lot of stuff to cover, and I'm so excited that I'm a part of the Reliability Web family. So you know, stay tuned.
Number three.
We're all about finding new links and people and connections and all that stuff. And Industrial Talk is about strategic relationships, too. And I've got two that are just are phenomenal companies. They have an incredible purpose. They are driven by wonderful people. And so I can't think of anything that's better than to highlight them. And one is Cap Logistics, and they're out of Colorado. And I'm going to give you some more information on them. But you know what they do? They deal with high-risk, high-issue supply chain problems that if you need to get a part there and you need to get it there now, they're the ones to call. And then, of course, ASG Energy. I interviewed Keith McCaslin as well as Chris Cohen, and they've just got a great purpose, and they're all about LED and how that LED solution in your business can reap tremendous financial benefits to the bottom line. So, you know, I am so thankful that they said, yeah, thumbs up with Industrial Talk, and we want to be a strategic partner. So I'm very fortunate, and now I've got a bigger network of people who are just passionate about what they do. So nonetheless, let's get into the interview right now. This gentleman's by the name of Jason Burt. Now, Jason Burt, here's his stat sheet over here on the computer screen. But what's really interesting about Jason? That guy knows everything about lean manufacturing. And he helps companies, and I'm reading this, he helps companies take a holistic and efficiency to implementing lean strategies, okay? He knows it all. He's a passionate guy. I am very fortunate. And you know who, where he came from? I was connected through Interview Valet, which is another wonderful company. I've had Todd Schwab on the podcast. Great company. They will help you out. And they contacted me because Jason is a lean guy, and I want to talk to lean guys. So anyway, find out a little bit more about Interview Valet if you want to get on the podcast circuit and have some interviews. That's Tom Schwab. He'll set you up for sure, and he will make you a success. So with that said, let's get on with Jason because he's a rock and roll star from my perspective. Hey, Jason, thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk podcast. How are you doing?
I'm doing great today, Scott. How are you?
I'm really well, man. And I know you're a busy guy. You're all over the world and really over the country, and you've got a lot of clients. So you got Friday off?
What's that?
You got Friday off?
Yeah, I do, actually. Yeah, I was traveling earlier this week, and I'm back in West Michigan hanging out for the day. Get to talk with you today.
Well, it's definitely my honor because I know, gosh, I am just, I can't tell you how much I'm honored to be able to have you on the podcast and many who join on the Industrial Talk podcast. It's just a delight. And so thank you very much. Hey, give us a little background on who you are, where you come from, and why you're so spectacular.
Well, I don't know about spectacular, but my background for the most part is lean manufacturing and operations. I worked at a company called Herman Miller for 15 plus years, and I was very fortunate that they had a relationship with Toyota Manufacturing Company. They were working as consultants with Herman Miller, teaching them about the Toyota production system and lean manufacturing. I got involved with them and started learning directly from them, and over the years progressed my career at Herman Miller, and now I started a company called Evolve Holdings or EHIP Consulting.
Slow down. You've got Evolve. What is it? Evolve Holdings, and then what?
Evolve Holdings, I say EHIP Consulting, so I use Evolve Holdings, Investing in Potential. That's kind of my tagline. So the consulting side is EHIP Consulting. I think of myself from an investment standpoint. My time is investment, so I really want to make sure I'm investing my time in companies and people and businesses that really show potential. There's several companies that, you know, I'll say no to because I don't think it makes sense for me to work with them. The relationship's not right. So
your Evolve Holding is sort of the financial arm of that.
It's kind of the holdings company. Yep. Yep. So I have a couple other side businesses as well, a couple other companies I'm developing. So Evolve Holdings is the holding company, and EHIP Consulting is my actual consulting company.
And is that an acronym, EHIP, or is it just because you're cool and you got that cool hat? I'm looking at you on that ear. You're just a hip guy.
EHIP is an acronym. So it's Evolve Holdings Investing in Potential. So that's the acronym. So EHIIP. And I try and live true to that as much as possible with the consulting that I do.
Yeah, and you've been consulting how long?
I started consulting. I left Herman Miller in 2011, so about 7 years now I've been consulting out of my own.
And you're enjoying it, right? I mean, that would the case. Now, what
it's
do you?
Been a great ride.
What do you normally focus on? So let's say I'm a customer right now, and I'm going, man, I need to talk to Jason because he is the man, and I need to do what?
Sure. So most of my customers are, you know, I have a couple different types of customers. One is equity firms. So, and then the other one is kind of business owners or high-level business leaders. And what they hire me for is to essentially help them fix their company. So they're struggling in some way, typically operationally. So I will go in and I'll help them develop a strategy to increase profitability, build a culture internally so that they're solving problems and improving on a day-to-day basis, but essentially implementing the Toyota Production System and lean manufacturing within their company to help them turn around and sell the company a few years down the road, or just improve the overall performance of the company and the KPIs.
Now, these are private equity companies, and so they would come to you and say, hey, we're interested in this business. They've got a great value proposition, but they're we think that we can make them more efficient, we believe, but it really requires your input there, Jason, because you're the lean guy, and so you would go in there and definitely achieve those targets that are specific to the private equity world, right?
That's exactly right. So I come in on a couple different levels with the equity firms. In some cases, the ones that I'm very close to, they'll bring me in before they make a deal. So they'll have me do some operational due diligence ahead of time to see what the upside is with the company. I'll put together, you know, here's what I think we can do with this specific plan, you know, whether it's driving revenue, you know, increasing margins, focusing on quality, different customer issues. And then the other side is if they've already executed a deal or they have a company that's not doing as well as expected within their portfolio, they'll bring me in to help turn the company around and drive it to where it needs to be.
I got to ask the question, how does one like you, you're a sole proprietor, you're the chief cook and bottle washer, right?
It is just me. I have people I use for when I have a lot of business that I pull on, but it is just me exactly.
How does a company like a private equity or a company just in general, how do you market to them? How do you get your name out there? What are you doing to? Look at me. I can't just call a private equity company and say, I'm Scott McKenzie. I'm really good looking and I can help you. And then they'll say, yeah, that's good. We're going to go with Scott. How do you market there, Jason?
Well, Scott, it really comes down to my good looks. It's really the main are. Thing that drives it.
And if you're comparing yourself to me, it's not much of a hurdle, by the way.
No, I was pretty lucky early on with some of my consulting work. It started off with just purely business owners that I had relationships with and some of my peers, people I knew, you know, connected me with. And, you know, private equity is very involved out there in the market. So once I get working with a company, you know, it's very likely that I end up having some intersection, and I ended up having one company in particular that had two different equity firms that had ownership of the company. It was an aerospace company, and I got to meet both of those equity firms and get involved with them. And then it's kind of cascaded from there. But I have a couple of equity firms that keep me fed with business. They're making, you know, multiple deals throughout the year and looking for help on those different acquisitions. But marketing in my business is very difficult. There's not a good way to just advertise or market. This is one of those platforms that I think makes a lot of sense because it's so relationship based in the consulting world. You know, you want to make sure that you're choosing someone that kind of fits your model of how you work and it makes sense to bring in and work with your company. So a lot of it, most of my clients come through referral, or it's someone that I've worked with in the past that moves to a new company and they instantly say, wow, I need to bring Jason in and let's work together on this new deal. That makes sense.
It does. It's a challenging environment just because I know that, I'll put you in contact with some people. We'll be able to expand that a little bit, but then a business owner, I mean, the same thing. They'll find you through referrals and so on. And it's like, yeah,
that's right,
Jason,
right,
because he knows what he's doing from a lean manufacturing point of view. Do you focus on a specific sector of the market, or do you just, are you broad?
Most of my clients are very manufacturing focused. I do have, you know, and have in the past had clients that are very service oriented. I've worked in with a commercial farm. I've worked in a lot of different industries. I've worked in the medical field as far as hospitals. Majority of my clients, majority of the space that I'm in is, you know, fabrication, you know, metal fabrication, plastic injection molding, foundries, you know, very manufacturing focused.
But you have but you have a furniture background, but you're saying your skill set, your lean skill sets translates into other manufacturing segments. It doesn't really
definitely
very good. Now, yep. I noticed in one of your documents, so I'm a business, right? And I want to transition. Either I'm looking for an exit strategy, or I want to improve my bottom line, whatever it might be. Why is it important? Because I know that you've got a article out there. It's a 10-page document. It is free out on your website. Should I start a lean journey? Why do I want to start a lean journey?
Well, I think the common thread that I see with so many different businesses that I go and work with, whether it came through an equity firm or some other referral, is so many companies are ready to transition ownership. We've got a lot of companies that, business owners that are ready, that are getting older. They're ready to move on. They don't have a good transition plan. And I think they don't have their companies ready. They don't have a good, stable company from the standpoint of they've transitioned who's running the company, standard processes in place that'll allow the company to move on as leadership changes over. And I think lean provides a lot of that stability. Lean can come in and, you know, really provide a good foundation for problem solving and good metrics and all those stable processes that an equity firm or some other new person looking to acquire a company is looking for. They don't want to come in and buy a company and know that, boy, once this entrepreneur leaves this company, this thing's going to fall apart. So I think that, you know, it's almost like prepping. You know, I know you had a guest on, Keith, the other day from ASG Energy, and he talked a lot about prepping companies for sale.
Yes, yeah.
And it was, I really enjoyed listening to that podcast because I think a lot of what he said was very valuable. And I see a lot of the same things with companies not being prepped. I know he was taking an angle more from a financial standpoint.
Yep.
In a lot of cases, but same thing from an operations standpoint. If you walk in and operations aren't set up so that they can be sustainable after transition to a new leadership, the company's going to fail. So I think my advice to many leaders out there is start now. Don't start or wait until 3 years from now when you want to sell the company, or 5 years from now when you want to sell the company.
Yeah, you can't turn that. You can't turn that switch and saying, oh man, exactly, I woke up, I'm tired, I need a transition out of my business and start playing golf or whatever. And it's not a switch. And from that point on, I would imagine it takes anywhere from an operational point of view, also from a financial point of view, anywhere from 2 years plus. So you say, hey, I got to be a little bit more proactive in my thinking of being able to transition myself out of this business and finding the right people. If you want to create a legacy, you got to start thinking about it now. And what's interesting, and Jason, correct me if I'm wrong, you've got the quote, I hate using terms like this, but baby boomers, and then they're ready to sort of, okay, I've been at it for many years, and I'm ready to sort of transition. And that's becoming more and more prevalent within the marketplace. You finding that?
Yeah, there's a lot of companies out there. You know, it's a really interesting market right now because I'm not as in tune with the equity acquisition side as obviously my equity firms. I'm typically brought in, you know, after that's happening. But there are a lot of companies that are getting ready to transition. There's a lot of business owners that are getting older and they're ready to move on. That whole process of getting their company right, they haven't even been thinking about it. So at the same time, you've got all these companies that are getting ready to be on the market, they're not ready. And at the flip side, it's a seller's market right now. So a lot of these companies, they're able to be sold even though they're not ready, because there's so much money sitting on the sidelines from an equity firm. There's so many people trying to buy these companies that I think people are getting off easy right now. They're able to sell their company in many cases, even though it's not ready. But eventually that market's going to change. Eventually it's going to move from a seller's market and it's going to become a buyer's market again. And there's going to have to be that work done up front to really get your company ready. I don't see it still being the seller's market 3 years from now, 5 years from now.
Yeah, it's difficult to know exactly what the market will do, and it's who knows. But the reality is that there's a lot of companies out there. They've got a good value proposition. They could be tighter from an operational point of view. They could be more financially strong, I guess. I don't know, whatever you want to put in place. But nonetheless, I hear what you're saying. So hold on to that thought. Yeah. We're going to be taking a break right now. We've got Mr. Jason Burt here, and we're talking lean manufacturing. Thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
All right, attention. Let's get out your calendars right now. We've got a couple of events that we have got to highlight. And these events are brought to you by the wonderful people at Reliability Web. So the first one is July 17th through July 19th, and that is in New Orleans, Louisiana. This is a training workshop, and it's called Asset Condition Management Training Symposium. Because I live near New Orleans, you know I'm going to be there. So I want you to be there so I can meet you most definitely. The second one is Maximo World. That's Maximo World. That's August 7th through the 9th. And that's Lake Buena Vista, you know. That's Orlando area. And if you have any interest whatsoever in knowing more about Maximo, the services that it can provide, and the tool that it is, Maximo, I highly recommend that you go to Maximo World. Now, the reality is that you have any interest whatsoever in, let's say, reliability, asset management, as well as maintenance, reliabilityweb.com has an event for you. As I look through their calendar and their schedule, they're just jammed all year with training, meet in the reliability space. So if those don't work out for you, I guarantee you can find one, but I highly recommend that you connect with reliabilityweb.com for all things reliable. I'm going to be there. I want to see you there too as well. Have a wonderful day. Hey, welcome back to the Industrial Talk Podcast. I'm having a great conversation with a gentleman by the name of Jason Burton. He's all about lean manufacturing. And Jason, during the break, we talked briefly about, and I'll position it in such a way that I'm here, I've got this business, and we're pumping out whatever it might be. And what I always found in the businesses that I've been involved with, it gets down to leadership. It gets down to the proper mindset. And whenever you start talking about an initiative, let's say like lean, right, the success of that implementation, that whatever the strategy, gets right down to leadership, right down to the mind of leaders, right? Can you expand upon that a little bit more?
Yeah, I think from Toyota's perspective, and that's where, you know, the majority of my learning has come from, is directly from Toyota around lean manufacturing. You know, there's several different things that, you know, there's so many different things we could talk about from a leadership standpoint. We'll try and narrow it down to just a handful of them here. But, you know, one thing that I learned so much from Toyota is that leadership is a process. There is a way to create a management system that allows not only the results that you're looking for, but it allows managers, supervisors, no matter what level you are within the organization, to be successful. And I think that's something that, you know, is very big focus of mine when I work with companies, is you'll see these supervisors and they're just flying by the seat of their pants on a day-to-day basis. These managers are flying by the seat of their pants. They don't have a very clear process as to how am I highlighting problems? How am I developing my people? How am I going out there and seeing what's happening on a day-to-day basis on the shop floor so I know what to improve, what to work on? So I think Toyota is really taught me that leadership is a process, and there's tools and there's things that, you know, that are in the lean toolbox per se that are there that are available to drive a very clear process on how to lead an organization to continue to get better on a day-to-day basis. I think that's one of the things, you know, one of the big learnings for me from a leadership standpoint is just that leadership is a process.
Do you map out that process? Do you say, okay, like for me, I'm very visual. I'm not one that likes to read text. I want to see that box with a line to another box, and that box has to be very concise in what it means, right? Is that part of that process too? You'll just look at a organization and say, okay, you guys, it seems like you're more reactive than proactive, so we got to figure that out. I mean, you got your organization needs training, and let's do this type of stuff. Do you go through that?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, if you think about from a visual standpoint, you know, Toyota is very big on visual and making it very clear what the next steps are. But so an example is, you know, creating some type of standardized work for a supervisor. you know, what do I do on a day-to-day basis as a supervisor? Am I, you know, running, chasing problems and not necessarily solving anything? Or do I have a regimented, you know, board that I'm going to that says, okay, here's what I'm doing the first hour. I'm verifying that my employees are, you know, following the standardized work. I'm going through and I'm understanding quality. I'm checking the productivity for the particular process, right? So they're creating a very structured environment like that. And when I say structured, it needs to be flexible enough that you can continue to improve it, right? We don't want to just put it in place and that's it. We have to continually improve the process. But giving them a process like that that talks to them about what's important to the organization, what are the actions that they need to take on a day-to-day basis that are going to help them be successful and ultimately help the organization and all the people that they support be successful. That's what process starts to look like from a leadership standpoint. Very few companies have that regimen.
So, okay, you're going to have an uncomfortable, you come in, you're being brought in by a private equity company. That private equity company says, boy, that's a great company. Jason, come on in and let's start improving the bottom line. There is no way that that company is going to say, doggone, Jason, you're a hatchet, man, because you're going to start making things lean or, I mean, how do you have that conversation with the entrenched workforce and saying, hey, this is, we got to make it and have that difficult conversation that always, because people shy away from that.
Yeah. I think it starts with me making sure that my path or what I'm trying to accomplish there aligns with the equity firm, aligns with the leadership. Right. So, you know, I mentioned earlier that, you know, I have clients that I say no to, and that's where our intent doesn't line up. And I talk very early on with any and all my clients and say, look, if we're here to be a hatchet man, that's not what I'm about.
Good.
That's not what I'm going to do. That's not what I want to be involved in. So if a company is going to bring me in, don't get me wrong, attrition happens. If we made improvement and people decide to walk out the company and we decide not to hire someone new, you know, I'm okay with that and capturing some of those results, but we're not here to fire people. Right. If we're going to create, you know, that's one of the things that ultimately a different way of leadership with Toyota creates is a culture, right? We're trying to create a culture that everyone every day is trying and willing to improve the business to make it better for themselves, for the customer, for the company. And the only way to create that kind of culture is to get people in a safe place where they feel that they can support what's going on around them, make changes, solve problems without the fear of losing their job or their buddy down the assembly line losing their job. So that is so critical, that whole job security.
Okay, so here you come in. Here's an as-is situation. This is the way the company is today. You just say, okay, you guys are like this. And you look at that company and you're saying, okay, management is like this. Operational stuff is like this. KPIs, how I'm going to measure, it's like this. But you come to, and I would imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, but you got to get a static state of saying, this is where you are today. And then map out a plan to say, this is where we need to be tomorrow. And to do that, you're going to have to measure that. How do you also come in and say, okay, you have no KPIs, or you have a KPI, and we need to sort of tweak it and do all of that stuff so that it's more meaningful. Do you go through that activity too as well?
Yeah, and it's obviously different with every company because every company is at a different state. So we have to be able to measure results. We have to be able to measure the impact of if we're solving a problem, whether or not it was successful or not. So having clear metrics and understanding what that current condition is today to be able to say this is a positive result, we've made some progress by, you know, solving X, Y, and Z. We have to have those in place. In some cases, you know, they're at a very high level to, you know, so that executive leadership can see our progress. Probably much more important is down at the process level, having very clear understanding of metrics so that we can see if I'm helping this person with their job and making their work easier, how does that affect it from a productivity standpoint? How does that help quality? How does that help them from an ergonomic standpoint? All those different things. So I think the metrics look different at different levels within the organization, but they're all very, very critical to be able to see the progress.
Are you looking at them from, you know, on a daily basis or weekly basis or whatever bimonthly basis.
Yeah, I think that's that leadership, you know, process that I'm talking about. So when we're at a shop floor level, we're looking at it on a daily basis. You know, we want to see, and not just a daily basis, it's on an hourly basis. So, you know, we want to be able to see on an hourly basis, how are we performing to the customer expectations? How are we performing to, you know, whether it be output, whether it be productivity, quality, so that we can, you know, the whole purpose, I say this to kind of, you know, try and keep lean or the Toyota production simple. The whole purpose in my mind of it is to highlight problems, whether that be problems in a process, whether that be problems at a leadership level or a customer level, to highlight problems so that we can see them and solve them, and then highlight more problems, see them, solve them, right? That's the simplest terms that I can sum up the Toyota production system or lean manufacturing, right? So at the shop floor level, when we're talking about a machine, you know, making widgets, we want to see those problems as frequently as possible so that we can solve them. I want to see that if this hour they went through and they were running the machine and a die broke and they were down for 30 minutes, I want to see that they were, I don't want to wait till the end of the day to see that downtime. So at the shop floor level, they're very frequent. At a leadership level, we may have some weekly, monthly, even yearly targets that we're going after that we're monitoring and continually adjusting based on how we're progressing with the work.
Now back to leadership, Jason. What is an ideal leader in a lean environment, right? What does that individual look like?
The way that
doesn't look like me, let's put it that way.
Well, it's always interesting because every time I think I have it identified and what a perfect, you know, not a perfect, but what a good leader is in an environment, you know, I see someone that kind of breaks that mold a little bit. But I think the biggest thing for me is the whole Toyota production system and lean manufacturing, as we're solving those problems, it's all about learning. So I think you have to have leaders that are very humble and they're very willing to learn. And, you know, in order to learn, a lot of times that's failure. So they need to be very, just humble is the best word that I come up with so many times. Because if you go into it with a very big ego, you go into it, I know it all, it's very difficult to improve. You may improve the process, but as far as the overall culture and the overall leadership capability, you're not going to continue to advance yourself. You're not continuing to advance the other leaders that maybe report to you or you work with. So I think that level of humility, the best companies that I've worked with are the ones that are very open to sit here and say, look, I don't know. I don't know, but I'm willing to go down this path with you. And I'm willing to open up and let's fail and let's solve some problems and let's see where this takes us. Those are typically the best leaders that I see down this process.
What's intriguing is that there's got to be a point within an organizational's life, whatever that culture is, that somebody's sitting down and says, we got to stop being so reactive. We got to be more proactive. The pain is too agonizing and I'm tired of being getting calls or whatever that point of agony that exists, that decision point. Now, it could be brought about by saying, hey, a private equity company's coming in and saying, we like what you do, but we need to do some things and changes. And that just is by virtue of that business activity. But then there's the other side that's saying, I can guarantee you they're sitting around in a conference room going, we've got to do something different right now because it's just too painful and I'm not having a good time. And so that to me is really interesting because if you have a company and the company's been doing it the same way for years and years and years and years and years, and then all of a sudden come to the realization that we don't have to continue to do it the same way that we've always done it, and then bring you in because you're talking about a significant transformation in the culture of that business.
Yes, definitely. It's not an easy transition by any means. The company, the ownership, the leadership, they have to be very committed to go down this path. If someone's only got one foot in the, you know, on the path, then they're not going to be successful. And those are the companies that, you see go down this path. They'll say that they're lean. They say that, yeah, we did that 5 years ago. And you go and you look at them and they're not continuing to live that. They're not continuing to improve still to this day. And most of the changes they made probably weren't sustainable at all over the years. So there's lots of companies that just want to dabble instead of truly investing what they need to do.
Right. Now, hold on to that thought, Jason. We're going to be taking a break right now. What I'd like to be able to sort of get your thoughts on is that if I am implementing a lean process focus in my business, what's my bottom line value? So hold on to that. I dropped that question into your head. We've got Jason here, and Jason Bird is providing us some great information about lean manufacturing. And so hang tight. Thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk podcast. We will be right back. Hey, once again, this is Scott McKenzie with Industrial Talk. If you like what you're listening to, please feel free to sign up for the free podcast as well as the blogs. I'll try to keep it all relevant to your business and hopefully be able to provide some insight into what we do at Industrial Talk and what you do as a professional. Hope to see you soon. Thank you. All right, welcome back to the Industrial Talk podcast. Having a great conversation about lean manufacturing with Mr. Jason Burt. And Jason, we were talking offline again, and I planted the seed before the break. What is the bottom line value? What are we talking about from a company's perspective? Why this is important? What are the targets? What can they expect?
Sure. Yeah, and this is always a interesting conversation I have with clients. When I'm putting together an initial proposal, everyone wants to see dollars. They want to see that return on investment.
If ROI, baby.
And I get it. I'm a business owner. I understand that. It's the struggle with that is that the value is so much more. So I'll put together proposals that'll show, you know, here's how we're going to grow your margin. Here's how much we're going to reduce inventory. Here's where quality costs are going to go. And we'll try and grab off the P&L everything that we can that we know we're going to impact. That'll show on this tangible financial document. And typically there, you know, the proposals I put together are anywhere from a, you know, 4 to 5 times return, you know, so it shows a very good return. And that's what we typically execute on and return for our clients. But what I continue to want to, you know, tell my clients is it's so much more, because if you develop a culture, like we talked about earlier, that's continuing to solve problems on a day-to-day basis, and they're continuing to do it once I'm gone, which is the goal, that you don't need me, that value is going to continue. It's like putting everything in a bank, and you're just continuing to get that interest every year, you're getting more and more value. So that value, that initial value, I can easily show, you know, 3 to 5 times return on investment, whatever that looks like. And we hit that. But let me just say that the value is so much more if you truly create that culture and impact your company for the long term.
Do you do international stuff?
I haven't. I've quest recently, and I don't know if it's going to turn into engagement or not. I have some, you know, some of the guys that I use to augment my capacity have done some international engagements, so we have the capability to do that. But I haven't, not since my days at Herman Miller, have I gone international and worked with different companies. So,
okay, so I enjoyed what you had to say. I see the value, and I want to, as a business, I want to take action, and I want to hear more about what Jason and lean manufacturing. What do I do? How do I get a hold of you there, Jason?
Well, there's a couple different avenues. One is to go to my website. We've created a nice landing page for your listeners on Industrial Talk. So if you go to EHIP Consulting, which is EHIIP Consulting.com/industrial, there's a landing page there. And on that landing page, you can click and you can download a very short ebook that you mentioned earlier in the broadcast. Good. It kind of talks about should I start a lean journey. I also have, you know, all the social media. Find me on LinkedIn. I'd love to connect with you guys on LinkedIn. Any of your listeners want to connect with me, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I'm on all the different social media platforms. And then the last way, which is probably, you know, if you're really interested in having some good conversation, you can book an appointment and a phone call with me right on my website. So click on it and pick a time that works for you, and let's get on the phone and let's discuss your company. Let's discuss what you have going on. And I'd love to do that with
whoever. And no obligation in a sense. You're just saying, hey, I want to have this conversation. It's all free. No big deal. Nothing.
That's right.
And And that's what's great about it. You're willing to provide that information. I think whatever happens, right, listeners out there, I mean, I think it's an important conversation to have if you're in that if you're in the manufacturing world. If not, I mean, just in general, I think it's a great educational tool. It's all free. The guy's an open book. I mean, there's nothing to complain about, right?
That's right. I had a great conversation last week with a gentleman who is a lean gentleman who is working in a very small factory making drones, and you know, they make about 5 drones a day. They couldn't afford to bring support in, and I spent half hour, 45 minutes with him just kind of giving him some guidance and talking through some of his struggles. So I'm very willing to just have some conversations, but you know, no commitment, like you said, necessary at all. So.
That's great. And he's it looks like Jason is trying to grow a beard, which is always good. It's all cool. You know, there it is, man.
That's right.
Yeah. So, you know, listeners, get on out there, find out more about that information. It's EHIIP/industrialtalkright.com. That's the landing page you got there.
It's EHIIP consulting.
Consulting.com/industrial. Well, it'll all be out there, and we'll make sure that everybody gets to it. Jason, we're going to have to wrap it up. I really appreciate your time. I know you're a busy man. You're going all over the country. Thank you. It's an engaging conversation, one that has to happen all the time, and I think it's going to be happening more and more as these baby boomers begin to retire and they got to figure out what to do with their business.
That is true. Thanks a lot, Scott. I really appreciate you having me on, and I appreciate you know, your listeners and your other podcasts. It's been great getting to know you through your other podcasts, and I really appreciate just being on the show.
Nah, it's a great time, man. I really appreciate it. Everyone, just stand by. I will be back on the other side. Thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. That's Jason Burt, man. He knows his stuff about lean manufacturing. He has a bright future. And for me, personally, I got a new friend. So I thank you very much, Jason. You are a wonderful guest. And thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on the Industrial Talk Podcast. You're adding value to the listeners of this particular program. So thank you very much. Once again, you know where you can catch all of this information. We've got a website out there. That's industrialtalk.com. We've got the Facebook. We've got the LinkedIn. We've got all of the platforms. We're out there on Twitter. So if you can't find it, you're not looking hard enough because it's out there. And once again, I want to say thank you to Reliability Web. We've just kicked off Reliability Radio. Pretty excited about that. We're pulling it all together. But for me personally, I'm honored to be affiliated with those wonderful people at reliabilityweb.com. Once again, if you have any issues or any interest in finding an event that's associated with reliability, you go to reliability.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today. Appreciate you joining. And once again, have a great week. And as always, be safe.